So we are going to be taking our lesson, preaching slash teaching, whatever it may be. I hope it's edifying. But we are going to be reading from Psalms 127, and we're going to read the entire chapter. And for those who are now worried, it's only five verses. And Psalms 127 reads, "Except the Lord build the house, they labor in vain that build it. Except the Lord keep the city, the watchman waketh, but in vain. It is vain for you to rise up early, to sit up late, to eat the bread of sorrows, for so he giveth his beloved sleep. Lo, children are an heritage of the Lord, and the fruit of the womb is his reward. As arrows are in the hand of a mighty man, so are the children of the youth. Happy is the man that hath his quiver full of them. They shall not be ashamed, but they shall speak with the enemies in the gate." Brother Pulford, will you pray for our lesson today?
Lord Jesus, we pray.
Amen. You may be seated. So, maybe a year ago now, my sister gave me a nice little display cabinet that has a handle that opens that you can display stuff. It's got a nice glass thing so that it's not going to get dusty, and it has another door on the bottom that you can open up and store stuff. One went upstairs and one went downstairs in my office. And being in my office, the fact that I don't have keys to the lock, I don't care. It's downstairs. Nobody's really running into my house to run downstairs to get into the cabinet. I mean, if they do, you're going to find some empty toolboxes and some random stuff, nothing really of value. But upstairs, we have our niece over. And being a year old, she loves opening everything. The word no is nothing more than a minor inconvenience or, at best, the shotgun start to screaming back. So I'm believing that my sister had the cabinets before, and I think the key was locked, so they actually drilled it out. And it's a little 3/4 inch, just looks like a file cabinet key, but it's in wood, just to open up. And so Sherry's got some stuff in there, I think, for plants or whatnot. And so you might have some chemicals or fertilizer. It's stuff you don't want the kids getting into. And so seeing that she was getting into it began a search to find the right lock for it. And there was only one vendor I could find on Amazon that actually had this lock because of the where it was put and where it was sized. There was a million other options, but nothing for this particular cabinet to lock it how it's supposed to be locked. So it finally came in, put it in. It's all set now, all tight. It's locked up, and now I feel comfortable now of her being in there because there's no opportunity for her to get into the cabinet and get into things that she shouldn't. And having a young one back in the house couldn't help but make me think of all the things that we did when a child is coming. Got to get the plastic things in the outlets so they can't stick their hands in there, so they can't put paper clips in there and zap themselves. We want to make sure we get the special locking things that you can put against the cabinet so they can't get under the sink, or the foam things you would have put on the corner of your coffee table. That's assuming you keep your coffee table and don't go to a rounded edge because now you're not worried about them splitting their head open. There's so many things that go through your mind as a parent of what do I have to do to safeguard the house. And it's very easy when you walk into someone's house to know when they haven't had children yet because there's sharp edges everywhere. There are corners everywhere. I personally, one thing I'm looking forward to is having an actual rectangle coffee table one day in my living room. I like having a coffee table. Why? It's someplace to put my feet. It's one of the few pieces of furniture that I'm really looking forward to. And I can't have it because my kids would have run into it or split their head open, and the cost of medical versus the satisfaction of the coffee table just far outweighed. But everything gets locked down. One, it's to keep the kids safe. The flip side of it is to keep everything safe from kids. I joke around. Someone's like, oh, you're going to get a new car? Why? I buy used because they're going to chew on crayons and then use that to draw on the ceiling and they're going to destroy everything. When they move out, I will buy something nice. When they have their own vehicle, I'll consider something. Because, let's face it, there are things that they can get into. If anybody's ever had a cat and a brand new sofa, it's not just, do I get a sofa? It's now, do I get plastic for the corners? Do I get special guards? Do I have to get some green apple or something to spray on it that they don't like? You know, in our experience, God forbid you find a pet that loves the taste of green apple. It becomes a satisfying thing for them to eat the furniture. To this point, my daughter has a cat that only likes her, doesn't like anybody else, but it also has a love for the bunk bed. So there is a nice maple stained with a 4 foot or 4 inch section all the way around that is now that beautiful underlaying oak color because it just had to scratch its claws on it. Those locks are to protect both sides, is to keep kids out and also to keep the things safe, both sides. But the thing is what do we put locks on? We have to put locks on something, right? If I just put a lock on the table, does it do any good by itself? Absolutely not. It's not locking anything. We have gates, right? Gates or doors for the cabinet that we have to keep safe. We have to lock up. Going back to my house, because I'm going to discuss things that I know, our house is really designed like a racetrack. We have a long living room that has a doorway in the front and a doorway in the back, then a long galley kitchen and a dining room. So if you really want, I mean, you can pull some laps. And it's wonderful when they're toddlers and they can't fall asleep because they got so much energy, Dad. All right, do a lap as fast as you can. I already took away the sharp things as much as I could. Took off all the things that they could slide on the carpet into the stove or anything like that. But, you know, it tends to get annoying. Right? Things coming in and out all the time. We want to slow down the kids or we want to keep animals out, so we end up putting gates in. Because, again, we have our young niece coming over. We put gates in the living room to keep her in there so when other people are coming in or to keep the dog in the area. Because we need separation. We need it to be an area of safety. Either side of the gate, it's still gated off, right? The only thing that changes your perspective, if you're the child, you're being kept safe in the living room. But if you're the dog that's getting chased by the toddler, being outside that gate is safety. And gates are great, and I can't help but think of a video someone sent me of people walking up to a door in the middle of a city, and saying, okay, go through the door, and the door's locked, and I just can't get around it. There's nothing else. There's no walls. It's just a door that's locked. Can you get to the other side? No, it's locked. And then you just stand there. All right. I did it. But the problem is, you know, the mentality of, I got to get through that. But what good is locks? And what goods are gates unless there is some kind of wall? You can have a gate in your yard, but if you don't have a fence, who cares? Well, walls are permanent. Well, they're meant to be permanent. They're meant to be solid. They're meant to have no way to get through it. Sheetrock, which I find amazing, if you don't want to break it, it breaks easy. But if you want to break it, you need a sledgehammer, and it's going to come apart in 78 pieces for a one-foot square. I remember taking down Pastor's bathroom ceiling in there, and there was no, oh, just grab it and break like most sheetrock. It was grab it with special gloves because there was wire mesh, and everything came down the size of a 3/4-inch pebble. And it was a long and arduous process. But at the same time, I can trip putting my shoes on, and there'll be a fill-size dent in the wall that I now have to patch. Supposed to be permanent. Why? Because its intent is that there's no access. It diverts all traffic. A wall is designed to prevent anything from merging. Its purpose is to divert people to the gates, to keep things out. to create sanctuary. Walls you can go over. I mean, we won't go politics, but there's plenty of walls that you can climb right over. Walls are great, but they're not an end-all be-all. Now, even in our walls of our house, I can't help but think, is we don't want easy access, but don't we have windows? Because we want to let some things and other things not. So we have glass so we can let light in. And if we want breeze, we open it up so that there's screen. Anything worse than thinking you have a screen window, go to pull it down and the screen's wide open. Now I can't leave it open. Stuff's going to get in my house because I don't want it in my house. Mm-hmm. We design things to have access to our lives. And I can't help but think about one of the most famous walls, Jericho. I love the VeggieTales. The little peas, they're going to knock your wall down. Love it. That became a quote with our little kids for the longest time, whenever he got mad. That's you, Keegan. Joshua 6:1 says, "Now Jericho was straitly shut up because of the children of Israel. None went out and none came in. They had walls. They had gates. They had locks on those gates to prevent anything from coming in." And I thought it was interesting, so I wanted to look at how the walls of Jericho, because I don't know, in my image, I just think one long wall, just straight built up. Now, in South America, I've seen some of the walls where they've done with stone and Machu Picchu, and you can't get a piece of paper between the rocks. It is so tight-knit. Walling, I know it's boring, I know it's drab, and we take it for granted, but when you look at the different technology that goes into it, it's quite amazing. So when I was looking at Jericho, I was surprised. It was built on a hill, on a hilly area. Now, most hills, you can just walk up the slope, right? I have a backyard that has a crazy hill. I don't have to jump to get down. I just have to walk slowly so I don't roll down the hill. Jericho had the same thing, but what they did is they cut off the bottom half of that hill to make it steep, and they put in a retaining wall. Retaining wall is meant to keep the hill there, but you get rid of that slope to make it difficult to climb up because now you got to climb up the wall. That retaining wall was 12 to 15 feet tall. Now, I think this ceiling is... No, it's about 7.5. If it... I can... Yeah, it's not even 8 feet. So, double this height. Now, I don't know about you, and I know we have some of the youth that are rock crawlers. That's great if you can climb up that. I see that and say there's no possible way. Where's the gate? Maybe I can convince someone to let me in. But on top of that, where that retaining wall stopped, there was another 20 to 26 feet of mud brick, 6 feet deep. So if you were standing there, it was like looking up a four-story house, 40 feet straight up. That's a pretty vast thing. And 6 feet deep is going to stop any weapons at that time period. But it was built on a hill. And that hill also went up. And where the hill went up, it went up, the slope was about 40 feet. So the top of the wall was 40 feet, but there was a second wall that was also at the 40-foot mark. And that went up another 26 feet. So if you will, both walls were here on a slope, and then there is a retaining wall. Okay. Altogether, that is quite impenetrable. But we know that's not the case. The thing I want to point out is it was built on a hill. It wasn't built on a foundation. Israel did not fight. They obeyed. They walked around quietly once a day for 6 days and then seven times in a day. And then they praised the Lord and the wall came down. You know, I won't go too much into it, but looking at the history, they tried saying that it happened years after it happened. They tried giving it to the Egyptians. They tried doing that. But when they dug down, the walls were still there, and they can't explain what happened. We know what happened. But they can't explain it because they want to rely strictly on science and not on the Lord. And that made me think is, great, so they had amazing walls, but and they had it on a hill, but was the foundation really great? Now, there should be no surprise, I love my chickens, so I'm going to talk about them. I have my chicken coop, Fort Knox. I trenched down. I flattened my area. I dug down so that I could put two sets of cinder blocks down, 6 inches deep, so that was level with the ground, so that way the coop would be perfectly level. Because I bought a nice coop that was 2x6 or 2x4 holes that you couldn't get into it. And then I put wire mesh around it so that you couldn't get even between that. So, you know, you have to be smaller than 1/4 inch to get in, and then the chickens are still closed in at night behind a second wall. And then I laid 2 feet of wire from the base of the cage out so nothing can dig under. And it came out great, but when I was building it, I didn't calculate the foundation right. I measured the outside and didn't plan for it to actually sit right. So when I went to build it and went to measure it, the coop, the walls, would have been 6 inches overhanging the foundation. Do you know what good those walls are? Absolutely nothing. I basically created a highway for weasels and stuff to get in whenever they wanted. And now, this is 9 o'clock at night. The panic sets in because not only did I do that, I bought the rock caulking that actually seals it. And it was starting to dry. So I'm out there ripping blocks apart frantically, trying to scrape off. I ended up with caulking all over my shirt, my pants. The outfit got thrown out. I ran to Home Depot looking like I had just crawled through the mud. I'm like, I need bricks. I need more bricks. And they're like, sir, we're closing in 10 minutes. I go, I know where they are. I got them. I ran home. I put it back together. And you know what? Now it's my little Fort Knox. If anything can get in there, they deserve to eat the chickens. Honestly. But the foundation wasn't right. It didn't matter how good the walls were. It didn't matter how well the gate is. It didn't matter what kind of lock I'd put on it. It didn't match the foundation. And just as much as the foundation isn't just enough, if anything could walk in. If I didn't have the walls, the gates, and the locks, anything could get to the chickens if I just left them there on the ground. It had to line up. Ezra 1:1-2 talks about the first year of Cyrus, king of Persia. It says, now in the first year of Cyrus, king of Persia, that the word of the Lord, by the mouth of Jeremiah might be fulfilled, the Lord stirred up the spirit of Cyrus, king of Persia, that he made a proclamation throughout all his kingdom and put it also in writing, saying, thus saith Cyrus, king of Persia, the Lord God of heaven hath given me all the kingdoms of the earth, and he hath charged me to build him a house at Jerusalem, which is in Judah. The first thing I want to point out is the Lord charged him to build. Okay. He could have just started building. Right. We can just start building. But we read in Psalms 1:27, if we labor with Adam, we're laboring in vain. But he was charged to do it. And jumping down to Ezra 3:1, it says, in the seventh month was come, and the children of Israel were in the cities, that the people gathered themselves together as one man to Jerusalem. Then stood up Jeshua the son of Jozadak, and his brethren the priest, and Zerubbabel the son of Shealtiel, and his brethren, and builded the altar of the God of Israel to offer burnt offerings thereon, as it is written in the law of Moses, the man of God. And they set the altar upon his basis, for the fear was upon them because of the people of those countries. And they offered burnt offerings there unto the Lord, even burnt offerings morning and evening. They kept also the feast of the tabernacles, as it is written, and offered the daily burnt offering by number according to the custom, as the duty of every day requireth. And afterward offered the continual burnt offering, both of the new moons and all the set feasts of the Lord that were consecrated, and every one that willing offered a freewill offering unto the Lord. That sounds great, doesn't it? They obeyed. They started having the offering. They got back doing the things they were supposed to. They got back doing those things. They had a good wall going. It says, from the first day of the seventh month, they began they to offer burnt offerings unto the Lord. Now, I know this isn't new to us, and we've been taught it, but as a reminder, it says, but the foundation of the temple of the Lord was not yet laid. They had great walls, they had the gates, the windows to the walls looked good, but the foundation wasn't laid, so all their work was in vain. In Haggai 2, 10 through 19 says, in the 24th day of the ninth month in the second year of Darius came the word of the Lord by Haggai the prophet saying. So now a time period has passed, and we see what the results were of what we read in Ezra. Thus saith the Lord of hosts, ask now the priests concerning the law, saying, if one bear holy flesh in the skirt of his garment, and with the skirt do touch bread, or pottage, or wine, or oil, or any meat, shall it be holy? And the priest answered and said, no. So they knew the answer to the question, but he was driving at something they didn't know. Then said Haggai, if one that is unclean by a dead body touch any of these, shall it be unclean? And the priest answered and said, it shall be unclean. Then answered Haggai and said, so is this people. So is this nation before me, saith the Lord. So is every work of their hands that they which they offer there is unclean. They had the altar. They had the feasts. They had their tabernacles. The walls looked good. But there was no foundation and it was all unclean. So is this people, and so is this nation before me, saith the Lord, and so is every work of their hands, and that they which they offer there is unclean. And now I pray you, consider from this day and upward, from before a stone was laid upon a stone in the temple of the Lord, since those days were, when one came to a heap of 20 measures, there were but 10, and one came to the press vat to draw out the 50 vessels of the press, there were but 20. What's that saying is, you thought you were being prosperous and you were happy getting half of what you should have been getting. We've been taught the lesson, content within the curse. But the problem is when we've been getting one or two and we get 10, we think we got the full blessing of the Lord, but we're still not receiving the full benefit because we are content within our system. We get content within our walls of what religion is. We get content in our walls of who he is. Instead of looking to make sure that the foundation has been laid, we get very comfortable what we think is right and wrong. And we think that the benefits we get are truly a blessing because it was more than what we had before. But it wasn't the fulfillment. It was still a cursing. Even in wrong, he still blesses us. Do you see his mercy? He could have been just as justified to say, you were expecting 20 and I took away 10. So you were down a negative net 30. You expected 5 and I took some from you. But even then, he is still gracious. And sometimes we take his graciousness and mercy to mean we are accepted instead of making sure that we are truly doing what he says. It says, I smote you with blasting, with mildew, with ale and all the labors of your hands, yet ye turn not to me, saith the Lord. Consider now from this day and upward, from the 24th day of the ninth month, even from the day that the foundation of the Lord's temple was laid, consider it. Ready? The foundation is laid today. It was unclean until the foundation was laid. Is there seed in the barn? Yea, as yet in the vine, in the fig tree, in the pomegranate, in the olive tree, hath not brought forth, from this day I will bless you. You aren't seeing the things you expect in your life, and I'm not talking about physical, I'm not talking about a fat bank account or a fancy car or anything like that, but if you're not seeing the spiritual life that you're expecting to see, if we're not seeing the fruits that we're expecting to see, is the foundation laid? Have we built the walls? Are the gates hanging there? Do we have those locks on those gates? See, the foundation has to be laid. It has to be fitly joined together. But we don't stop there. We get so caught up, and this is not a negative, but we get so caught up in making sure the foundation is laid that we forget that there's walls. We want to make sure that just the floor is beautiful, but yet there's wide openings that people can come in. More importantly is we have a foundation, but we don't care what enters in onto that foundation because the foundation's true. It doesn't matter that we let things of the world come through the walls and step on the foundation as the foundation, sure. And it's not. The foundation's the starting point, and we build those walls so that we are safe from those things. We need to be in his temple, his castle for us. There's things that have come in, and I'm talking to myself here. There are things that have come in that have no business on his foundation. It's not permanent, though. It's just walking through. Those things don't walk on the Lord's foundation. They have no place in his temple. Yeah, but it's okay. Yeah, it might be okay. Maybe it's okay for that person because it's not trampling on the foundation. They got the walls laid. But there are things in my life that you might not have a problem with and vice versa. There is deference I should be given. I shouldn't be a stumbling block. But more importantly, I need to examine my life, not just that the floors are there, but have I built up the appropriate walls and defense? Have I set up the gates that say, only things that come in have to pass this check? The wall still has to be manned. It has to have watchmen on it. They have to be taking a look to make sure people aren't climbing over. The gate was designed so that there is a measured contact with the things that are outside. Do we have that approach in our spiritual lives? Do we have a spot that everything has to pass through to make sure it belongs in his temple? Do we examine it? Or is it a free throw? A thoroughfare. Unwanted access to our life will destroy us. It says, except the Lord build the house, they labor in vain that build it. Cyrus was commanded to build the temple. We are commanded to build his temple, his kingdom in our lives. Yes, we must make that foundation sure. We must make sure, and we must check back, and we must check back. But you know when you have the opportunity to check to make sure the foundation's there? Is when you have walls there that prevent anything from getting on top of that floor and blinding you. When you get those distractions out, when you don't let those things just blow you away. But also, except the Lord keep the city, the watchman waketh, but in vain. It doesn't matter if you built it, and you built it according to his instructions, if you do not do the due diligence to make sure that the building and foundation is up to spec as he has declared, it will fail. They will climb over the walls. And that's what it means. It says, it is vain for you to rise up early, to sit up late, to eat the bread of sorrows, for so he giveth his beloved sleep. That's not saying don't work hard. That's referring to the first couple verses here. We can put so much labor thinking we're accomplishing something. And that's what it's saying is, you rise up early and you stay up late. You can toil all day long, but if God is not in it, it is in vain. It is a waste. Don't brag that you're putting in 80 hours if 60 of it is useless. I'm glad you work 80. I'm efficient with my time. It says to eat the bread of sorrows. And that's a callback to Genesis 3. That in sorrow we shall toil and plant and eat of it. We can labor and think we are accomplishing so much. We can build walls and look back and say, what I built and all of it's for naught. And it says, he does this for his beloved in sleep. We labor so hard outside of him, and the benefit we get just sleeping, but being in his kingdom, obeying his command, is far greater than exerting ourselves. I am not against the go-get-it that this generation has. To work hard, play hard. I get it. I'm not condemning it. But if we're doing it to gain the whole world and lose our souls, it has been a waste. It is squandered. It says, lo, children are an heritage of the Lord, and the fruit of the womb is his reward. One thing I thought was interesting about the first verse is that word house doesn't just mean a building, but also talks about the family. It talks about those that are within your household. So I'm going to be a little more broader in my discussion here. Is we can get so busy doing work, and I'll sit, so busy making sure that this building looks good, that we forget the purpose of why the building is supposed to look good. I find myself guilty of that, and I find myself annoyed by that because I see it and I'm annoyed by that, but I want it to look good. And there's nothing wrong with wanting the building to look good. I think it is very beneficial. But when our focus becomes the pride of the building versus this is the house that we get to see him, we lose focus and we think that our efforts to add another coat of paint because we added the paint, that's what the purpose is. No, what the purpose is, it's his temple. We want to show deference to him. We don't want to show people, oh, look at the paint job we did. We want people to come here and say, look at the Lord. Look how good he is. Look what he has done in my life. So that these small sacrifices mean nothing to me. They're not the goal. My goal is him. My goal is them. My goal is reaching the lost. My goal is the children are an heritage of the Lord, and the fruit of the womb is his Lord, is his reward. You know what the benefit is? The goal is, the desire is to bring more sons, more daughters into his kingdom, to bring more heirs, to bring more mothers and sisters in here, to increase the size of his family so that they see him. I want more brothers and sisters. The world says, you know what? It's great if you're an only child. When mom and dad kick it, you get a better inheritance. Let me tell you, his inheritance is infinite. The more there is, the more joy there is. It doesn't diminish what you are in him. If anything, your joy will be fulfilled when you look over and you see people that you might have touched their lives because of what God done for you. As arrows are in the hand of a mighty man, so are children of the youth. Happy is the man who hath his quiver full of them. They shall not be ashamed. Who? The quiver's not ashamed, or the man that has reached? The man that has reached shall not be ashamed of his efforts, of his work to expand the kingdom. And the last sentence just didn't make any sense to me. But they shall speak with the enemies in the gate. What? Why? Why would they speak with the enemies in the gate? And what that's speaking is they shall command. They shall be established. The enemy's not in the city. The enemy's not in the wall. There is no warfare. If there is war, you're not speaking except for saying, die. There is no conversation. There is conversation when there's peace. Just because there's peace doesn't mean they are not an enemy of the city. But that speaking says they can command the enemies at the gate. Imagine that. The walls are solid. The walls are built. The foundation is solid. The gates are well. The gates are hung. And there's locks on it. So when the enemy shows up, you just say, no, go. This isn't your place. You don't have to war. They see that the Lord is God in that temple. They see that the Lord is king there. They see that the watchman is empowered by him. They know that the walls are established by him. They know that the kingdom is established by him. Let's bring them in so that that his kingdom is expanded. So that each individual, their walls are built up. But to us, let's make sure our walls are built. And I'm not saying we isolate. I'm not saying we all become xenophobic, which means, for those who want to know, that means fear of strangers, fear of foreigners. That's not what I'm saying. We are not designed to be a candle put under a candle thingy. Thank you. All right? We don't need a lampshade. We're not turning on the light to draw it down. We're not trying to buy a 100-watt bulb and turn it to a 25 by putting a shade on it. We are not to be hidden. We are not to be withdrawn. We are to be a strong fortress where they say, oh, I know them. Their builder and maker is God. When the enemy comes to the gate, they say, look, I'm not coming to attack you, but what do you got? How do I get in on this plan? My walls are in shambles. I live in a hovel. I see what he has done. How do I get some of that? That doesn't get there until we take the time and not only make sure our foundation is laid, but we cut off the things of the world that need to be cut off. Where the focus is what he wants in that house. It's too easy to leave it wide open for what anybody else wants. I don't have a question for you this morning. Hence, we paused the Sunday school class in Romans, and I like ending with a question. But more a challenge is, have you examined your foundation? Have you examined your walls? I guess that's a question. Have you examined your gate, and do you have locks on it? It's not enough to say, my foundation is sure, I know him. Oh, do you? Have you built the walls to keep out the things? I tell you what, if you really know him, you know what he likes. I have a friend of mine. Whenever their family wants to come over for dinner, I always joke that he wants pork chops when he comes over. He hates pork chops. He hates them. He goes, why don't you just roll them in hazelnut and something else he's allergic to? He goes, and we'll make a feast of it. I know full well pork chops will never be on the menu. Because I value him. When my friends come over, I try and have those things that my friends like. If I'm going over pastors, I know a good way to get inside the house is to have gummy bears and Coke. I know that's something that's enjoyed, or chocolate chip cookies. I know that'll grant me access. Why would we invite someone in to be a guest and serve them garbage? Why would we make him king in our lives and give him half attention and give him not the best things of ourselves? Is that what we are serving him? Check the foundation. Check the walls. Check the gates. Check the locks. Pastor, will you pray a closing for us?